And the other thing that's so important about this study, though, is that there is a lot of shame in couples around masturbation. We hide it from our partner. We think it's cheating. We think that they're not satisfied with us. If you bring masturbation into the bedroom and you do it together, well, that's just another thing that you don't have to feel bad about. And we're doing it together. So this isn't replacing your solo masturbation, but this is just another thing in your sex toolkit. You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. Today, we are bringing back a Sex with Emily classic, Sex in the News. And if you're new to the show, welcome. This was one of my favorite recurring segments on the show, both of my podcasts as far back as 18 years ago and on SiriusXM. So today, my producer Eric and I are discussing some sex in the news, including how often should couples be having sex, infidelity in long-term relationships, mutual masturbation, and much more. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show, my new articles, The Lover's Guide to Sex Etiquette, and 5 Ways to Do It Doggy Style are up on sexwithemily.com. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy, whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage. The Magic Wand should be your go-to with powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns. It's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this Mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. I'm so excited for today's episode because we've got some amazing articles pulled up right now. There's been a lot happening in the news lately when it comes to sex. There's some great research. There's some interesting studies. There's some things that people are doing that are just going to probably blow your mind and inspire you. And so I'm here with producer Erica, and we're going to go through them with you.
There we are.
Today, we're going to get into it. And if you remember the SiriusXM days, I used to do Sex in the News. I think when the show first started 18 years ago, I did a lot of Sex in the News. And it is time because we got a lot of news to catch up on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on in the world right now. Erica, I want to start with this one because this is probably one of the most common questions I get asked from couples. Usually it's one person in a couple who says to me, how often should we be having sex? All the time. So this is how often happy long-term couples have sex. Do you meet the number? 2,000 British couples in happy long-term relationships revealed how often they get steamy between the sheets. They found the couples that had been together for a minimum of 10 years had sex 7 times a month on average. So I guess that's like 1.5 times a week.
Yeah. Do you think that's...
What's the halftime? You think it's just like a hand job?
Right.
Is the halftime like... Yeah. They said the magic number helped them build a successful relationship. Here's the other things they said, that they did not believe sex was the most defining part of their unions. And they said having fun together was a crucial factor for their relationship and what's kept them together for more than a decade. They also said that compromise, having no secrets, having the same sense of humor were also valued as more important than the bedroom.
Do you agree?
When people ask me this question, Eric, I always say, I'm not going to give you a number.
Yeah.
I say, I'm not going to tell you a number because you're going to lock into that number and you're going to be like, okay, you're going to compare me to everyone else. But what I have found is that on average, what works is about once a week. That's like, if you made me, you had a gun to my head, you're like, give me a number, once a week works.
Yeah.
And I think that once every 10 days doesn't work. Once a month probably doesn't work for couples. Now, let me also say this caveat. If you're in a relationship, you're like, no, Emily, you're wrong because my partner and I have sex once a month and we're both very happy about it. Then there isn't a problem. But I would say, really, call into the show because I want to talk to you both. And then I find that usually there's one partner who usually wants it more in that scenario. Because I found that usually there's not couples where they both match up and have the same exact sex drive. There's always one who wants a little more than the other one. And I want to normalize that. Mm-hmm. So if you can get down to a number here and say, okay, 1.5 times is the norm, and that helps you somehow get to a place of feeling like good about it, then that's fine. Then you're allowed to use a study to say like, this might work for us. I think that's pretty much makes sense. It's like working out once a week doesn't really help you either. You kind of need to do it twice a week or 3 times a week. But
sex is a little different. It's like you
sex
can't,
is different.
Well, partnered sex.
Partnered sex is
what we're
different.
Talking about. If you're talking about solo sex as well, then it's probably
higher. A little more than that. I would say that you should do solo sex a little bit more than once a week, but partnered sex, there's a lot going on in your lives. If you can come together once a week or 1.5 times a week, I want to put that 1.5 to be saying that mutual masturbation could be that half.
Yes.
Because mutual masturbation is actually a great way that it's sort of like masturbation, but you're both getting off and it's less complicated perhaps. It's less like, we got to get in a position we both like, but you know you're going to have orgasms. It's going to move a lot quicker. And it's still about connection. Because you know that one of my missions is to decenter sex on penetration. That if you make that halftime a mutual masturbation, it's not about penetration. You're still connecting and you're still having orgasms, which we know is great for our mental health, our physical health.
I wonder too if the 1.5 times could be 1 time is like penciled in the calendar every week, because you always talk about how amazing scheduling sex is, finding a time that works for the both of you. If neither of you or one of you is not aroused in the morning, then why would you try to have sex in the morning? And then the halftime could be like, ooh, a spontaneous one.
Yeah, it could be a floater. I like that. And then also, you guys remember this. Sex begets sex. So you just might find out that we had sex on Thursday night because that was our penciled in night. And then you woke up Friday morning still feeling like it was in your system and you want to have sex again. That's really, really common. So just try to get that 1 time down and then let this floating half sex thing happen as it will. A floater.
I love it.
Ooh. What?
So the same article says, although many respondents said regular sex was important, 5% of couples polled admitted to sleeping in separate bedrooms.
This is a trend right now, Erica. This is coming up all the time now that people are living in separate bedrooms or separate homes. It's called the LAT movement, living apart together. And it's happening. And I'm telling you guys, this makes a lot of sense. If your partner snores, if you feel better on your own, if it makes you get excited for the times you are together and you have enough space, have a separate bedroom, sleep separately. Again, you guys, you get to decide what rules work for you. And I love that they're starting to research this to find it out.
That's pretty significant. I feel like 5%.
5% is pretty significant to say, like, we're going to sleep in separate bedrooms. And I think you normalize that. Your kids are going to be fine. I think people don't do it because they're like, they're kids. And it means that we're not doing something right. But remember, there is no sex police. No one's knocking on your door saying, like, I saw you sleeping in separate bedrooms. Is that okay? No. Like, if it works for you, do it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, 20% of those surveyed said they had cheated on their partner. But of those, 58% were caught being unfaithful, but most were able to recover from their major mistake. 85% of couples surveyed said they were able to stay together after the infidelity, while 38% actually alleged that the affair made their relationship stronger in the end. This tracks. A lot of people cheat on their partners. When they get caught, that's almost 40% say it helped their relationship. This is not an advertisement to cheat at all. But all I'm saying is if you do happen to catch your partner or something happens with infidelity and you get the right help, it doesn't say here how many of them went to therapy, but I'm telling you, the couples who make it through an infidelity incident typically work with a trained therapist to help them through it so they can learn to communicate better on the other side.
I mean, clearly it's true because it's such a high percentage, but I feel like it's kind of jumping from A to Z of like cheat, be stronger. Like what are all the steps in between? I know it's therapy, but like what are some of the things that people
okay,
work
through? Yeah, let's just say this. I'm not in any way saying that you should cheat to fix your relationship. Please don't interpret it that way. The steps in between are literally having healthy communication from the jump. Go to therapy early on in your relationship so you can figure out the best tools to work on it. If you feel like you're going to cheat, before you do that, turn towards your partner, not away from them, and say, have I done everything I can do here? Have I had a healthy conversation about our sex life? Have I talked to them about these resentments that have built up over time? Have we done the things that we need to do to make sure that we are in a healthy union? And I think we're probably going to catch some people here who are probably about to cheat, I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. It's so common. And maybe you're going, oh, wow, I haven't done all that yet. So that's what I recommend, working on your tools so you don't cheat, for sure. And then the step would be, if you're unfaithful with your partner, stop. And go back to your partner. My opinion is that you don't necessarily need to tell your partner that you cheated. If you're committed to working on your relationship now, if you realize right now and listening to this like a wake-up call, and you're like, you know what? I actually made a mistake. I learned something from that. And I want to work on the relationship with my partner. And you're going to literally make an appointment with a therapist today. You're going to get into therapy and commit that you're going to go to therapy once a week for the next 6 months with your partner. I don't think that you need to bring up the affair, because when couples do tell their partner, it becomes all about the affair and they don't get to work on those underlying issues. If you've decided that affair is done and I'm going to work on it with my partner, then you could really get into, why was I even feeling like cheating? What is the problem in our relationship? How can we learn to communicate better? Listen, when you go to couples therapy, they give you tools to communicate in your relationship in a way that you probably have never done before. And that's why we go to therapy. They're going to tell you how to talk about challenges that you're having. They're going to teach you how to fight better. They're going to say, like, here's how you listen. I mean, a lot of therapy is really learning how to listen, how to report back what your partner said, so you can actually hear each other. You can support each other. And it doesn't even take that long for some couples. So I'm just a fan of getting into therapy and figuring out what you can do, because maybe you'll find that the affair was just the impetus that you needed to get your relationship back on track.
And if it really is about a desire to sleep with other people, maybe that's a time to have a conversation about ethical non-monogamy, opening it up so that at least you're able to fulfill that need without disrespecting your partner.
That's it too. If you're feeling like, no, you know what, Emily, I actually like this affair, or I like what I'm doing here, go to see a therapist to help you figure out what kind of relationship you want. More and more couples are opening it up and practicing ethical non-monogamy. But, you know, the ethical part of it would be going to a therapist and figuring out how you can communicate that in a way that your partner can understand.
And being on the same page together.
Being on the same page together, so it doesn't become a breach of your commitment. All right.
Very interesting.
Very, very interesting. So what else is in here?
On average, men considered confessing love 69 days into a relationship, while women didn't think about it until 77 days in. And I saw another article that said that men on average say, I love you first. And I feel like that is so not the message that we hear in society.
I think that men do say it first.
Mm.
Interesting. You've heard that women say it first more.
Well, okay. I think in my day to day, I hear about men saying it first. I feel like it's always the trope of like, the woman falling in love harder and faster and like, oh, don't fall in love with me. And it's like, I'm not.
That is so interesting. Yeah, I feel like maybe it's shifted in years, but I feel like maybe that just honestly for me too, I would feel that I would wait for someone else to say it before I would say it to feel safe.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But women are often the ones who feel things more, have more language around love. It might be a little bit more. I hate to say this too, because gendered, I mean, we're all so, it's so hard to be like, women feel this and men feel that. But, you know, sometimes women are the ones who push the emotions agenda first. So, but you know what I think here too, that men might say it because they also want to have sex with their partners sooner than later. There might be some ulterior motives here. And maybe that's an old thing too. Maybe people aren't doing that anymore, but there used to be a, if I say I love you to this person, they're going to sleep with me.
Wow. Maybe now there's less stigma around casual sex. So now there's less of a need to tell someone that you love them before getting to sleep with them.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's changed too. So they found almost 1,000 participants to complete a love confessions questionnaire online. And they had to be 18 or older, identify as heterosexual, and describe a current or past relationship in which both partners had said, I love you at least once. In all 7 countries, men and women said that men were more likely to say, I love you first. In France, 59% of participants said it was the man. In Chile, a whopping 81% of participants reported the same things. So this is strong evidence for the existence of a male confession bias, which means that men, maybe everywhere, are more likely to say, I love you first.
For me, the result of this is kind of dispelling the notion that men don't have feelings during sex. You know, they're just emotionless, stick it in anywhere, kind of that old trope.
I think this is supporting it, though. That study's kind of supporting it and saying that men say it.
Oh, you're saying they say it more, but they don't mean it.
I'm saying that when men get an erection and they're turned on and they're aroused, there's a lot going on in the moment. And I don't think that they're consciously going, I'm going to say I love you and I'm going to have sex. But the feeling, like think about it when you have an orgasm. So many emotions come up that it's sort of, it's all together. Like you're having a physiological response to arousal and you're with somebody. And so sometimes we can take that orgasm or that connection and be like, it must be love. But really, this reminds me of Helen Fisher. Romantic love is broken down into 3 categories: lust, attraction, and attachment. And each category has its own set of hormones stemming from the brain. So to me, this is lust and attraction and all the hormones and the newness of a relationship, which we're talking about the first 69 days of a relationship or 77 days of a relationship. This, you might say that it's love, but really you're feeling this overwhelming feeling of emotions that are spurred on by new chemicals with the new partner. So while you might say love, like deep love, it's probably more like lust. It's not like however you define love, it's your chemicals in your brain. Now, lust is driven by the desire for sexual gratification, and the evolutionary basis stems from a need to reproduce and a need shared from all living things. Now, there have been a lot of debates over this stuff because let me say this. Helen Fisher did these studies 30, 40 years ago. Now, remember, Erica, we have not studied human sexuality a lot at all. We haven't spent a lot of money on it. We haven't spent a lot of time on it. A lot of stuff we talk about is evolutionarily speaking. Not only like we are changing, we are evolving. Men are being born with less testosterone and more estrogen in the last 30 years. There's just a lot of things that have changed, biologically speaking. And so while a lot of stuff has a basis in evolutionary psychology and evolutionary biology, we've changed in recent years. There's a lot of evolution that's happening. So to say that everything we do sexually is our need to reproduce is still true because we're still mammals, but there's a lot of new information, a lot of new things that need to be studied. So I think this isn't completely conclusive. I think that we can't ignore the hormones. During the lust phase, we're talking about testosterone and estrogen. In the attraction phase, it's dopamine, serotonin, and then attachment is oxytocin and that love hormone and the cuddle hormone. But what we're talking about here is these like hormones firing that's going to make me feel like I want to say I love you, but really I'm really just saying I lust you. That's my take on this. But I don't think you can really deeply, deeply love in the way that we think like this is the partner for the rest of my life. Love 69, 77 days in. I don't think you know someone enough. Now people are going to email, oh, but I met my partner. We slept together on the second date. We've been together 30 years. You grew into love. You grew into connection. You grew into intimacy and you raised a family. But where we're at today, modern day people in their 20s and 30s, I think that we're going to see some different data here.
What do you think is like a healthy amount of time, in your opinion, to say I love you to someone?
I think it happens on average 3 months to a year in, 9 months in.
I feel like that makes sense.
But I just want people to look at like, what does love mean? Do you really know that you love somebody? I think that we don't really know anyone until we've been together with someone for 2 years.
But do you think you can love someone before knowing them fully?
I think you can love them to the best of your ability. But yeah, you can love them. You can care about them deeply. You can bond with them in a really intense way. And yes, I think you can love someone after a few months. Don't change the channel. We'll be right back after the break discussing more sex in the news. But first, let me tell you about one of our OG partners, Permescent. They're the sponsor of this episode, and Promessa makes the one and only delay spray I recommend. And I recommend it to anyone who's looking to delay their orgasms. Here's how it works. It helps penis owners last up to 64% longer in bed. And it's long lasting. It doesn't transfer to your partner, so you don't need to worry about that. And it's perfect for anyone who struggles with premature ejaculation. Or if you just want to practice edging or having longer sex sessions, Promescent is the way to go. It's also great for closing the orgasm gap because vulva owners typically take 20 to 40 minutes to orgasm. So the longer the session, the more likely vulva owners are to orgasm. Simple as that. If you want to have longer lasting erections and close the orgasm gap, go to promescent.com/Emily and save 15% off your order. That's promescent.com/Emily or click the link in the show notes for 15% off. All right, everyone, I'll be right back. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread, so here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co.
Which one next?
Okay, what do we want next? I think we should get into mutual masturbation.
Let's do it.
Okay. Do you guys know how excited I was when I saw there was actual study about mutual masturbation? I have been pushing you all towards mutual masturbation for almost 20 years, but now mutual masturbation is linked to higher sexual satisfaction in couples, a study finds. So individuals who engage in mutual masturbation, which is when partners stimulate themselves sexually while being together, tend to also exhibit higher levels of sexual satisfaction in their romantic relationships. The researchers conducted this study as part of a larger research project, which collected data from mixed-sex couples and female same-sex couples. Initially, the researchers aimed to include both partners from each couple. However, due to some partners not completing the survey, they decided to analyze data from individual participants. So the final sample included 117 women and 151 men who range in age from 18 to 65 years. So what they found is participants felt good about it after. They were down. Like most of them were like, we like mutual masturbation, mm-hmm. which is awesome. And then they found, most importantly though, the study found a positive relationship between recent mutual masturbation and sexual satisfaction. In other words, individuals who reported engaging in mutual masturbation experiences in the last 2 weeks had higher levels of sexual satisfaction reported compared to those who didn't engage in mutual masturbation. This is so important. Authors of this study are Dillian Killick and Heather Armstrong and Cynthia Graham. So here's takeaways from this research. There's a lack of education about women's sexuality and sexual pleasure. Mutual masturbation can be an educational tool for both women and their partners about women's pleasure and anatomy. And this is critical to helping couples develop satisfying and pleasurable sexual and romantic relationships, which makes sense, everybody. So basically what they're saying here is when you mutually masturbate, you both get to learn about each other. Not only is it hot to watch your partner masturbate, which it is, once you get past the shame and the worry, whatever, it's really hard to watch your partner masturbate. And you're also learning. Mm-hmm. It's a twofer, as I love. You're saying, oh, I didn't realize that my partner put her fingers in her vulva while she masturbates. So that means when I'm going down on her, I'm going to do that too. Or she touches herself moving in circles around her vulva. So that means when I go down on her, I'm going to move my tongue in circles too. So basically it's saying like we're learning as we're watching it because we don't have a lot of education. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge finding. And their second takeaway is that sex is not equal to vaginal penetration and doesn't have to follow traditional sexual scripts that are portrayed in popular media that only penile vaginal sex is real sex, which has been a huge mission here to decenter sex on penetration. I love that there's a study that is showing that. And couples should develop their own definition of sex, including diverse sexual activities to enhance mutual sexual pleasure. And broadening one's sexual repertoire with mutual masturbation can create diverse sexual opportunities with a partner that may uncover new sources of pleasure.
That makes total sense to me. Because I feel like, especially for vulva owners, if we're not going to orgasm through penetration anyways, it's like, I want to connect with my partner. I want to feel good. I want to have an orgasm. Can we just connect and kiss and cuddle and engage in mutual masturbation? Then we're both going to get off. It's like less tiring.
It's less tiring. It's the sure thing.
Yeah.
You're both going to get off. You can still make out and kiss and do all the things and go down on each other. But at the end of the day, you can both also get each other off. You're like, okay, let's wrap this up.
Right. I feel like that's maybe, exactly. If people haven't done it before, they might be thinking that it's like, you're both masturbating next to each other and like watching each other. It's like, no, you're both like being intimate and cuddling and kissing, but you're just touching yourselves while like the other hand's on your partner. It's great.
Mm-hmm. This is it. This is it, you guys. This is a great explanation of why we always talk about it. And I love that we're saying like you're not sitting like robots side by side. You're doing all the things that you normally do. Maybe you're making out, you're going down on each other. And then it just isn't ending in penetration. And in fact, it could even start with penetration. Like maybe you penetrate for a few minutes and then you get into mutual. Like it doesn't, we're not scripting you. We're giving you ideas. So maybe you penetrate for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then, okay, let's just each finish each other off, finish ourselves off. So that's what it's about. I love that this is illustrating it for people in very clear terms, not only why it works, but by talking about it here with you, Erica, maybe people go, oh, I get it now. And I would love if there's a light bulb moment.
Especially because so many people write in and tell us that they can only orgasm by themselves. They can't orgasm with a partner. So yeah, you still have sex and then you get your orgasm at the end. Great.
God, it makes so much sense. This is like the poster child study. We love it. I hope this is an inspiration for you all to maybe like get some toys, have the conversation with your partner about, you know, masturbation. And the other thing that's so important about this study, though, is that there is a lot of shame in couples around masturbation. We hide it from our partner. We think it's cheating. We think that they're not satisfied with us. If you bring masturbation into the bedroom and you do it together, well, that's just another thing that you don't have to feel bad about. And we're doing it together. So this isn't replacing your solo masturbation, but this is just another thing in your sex toolkit.
Love it.
Let's talk about sleep and sex. There's a new study that says sex can be more effective against insomnia than sleeping pills. I love this because everybody's talking about sleep these days. Sleep is a very like hot topic. People are talking about hacking your sleep and don't be on your screens for 2 hours before bed. Wear the light blocking glasses. Don't have caffeine after a certain time. There's all these like best practices for sleep. But when I hear about a study that says that sexual activity and non-sexual touch, which triggers an oxytocin release, can help to positively impact your sleep, improve the quality of the sleep, and help you fall asleep. Like, you know, I'm all for this.
That sounds amazing. And also probably one of the most natural medications or ways to get yourself to go to sleep.
Exactly. We need this. I mean, this is the thing. It's like, if you've also been thinking like, I need some other kind of incentive to have sex or to masturbate, it's going to help you fall asleep. I think there is this whole cliche that like the men fall asleep right after orgasm. I guess not a cliche, it actually happens, but this also can help vulva owners as well. Because what happens is after we have an orgasm, we release hormones that are linked to sleep benefits. So not only does it help with emotional bonds and reducing stress, but again, it helps us with falling asleep. So
have sex before bed.
Have sex before bed.
Masturbate before
bed. Have sex, masturbate before you fall asleep.
I guess that's one reason, because that people always talk about how they're so tired, especially after the workday, too tired to have sex. Maybe this is a good reason, like just a quick orgasm, just mutually masturbate.
Have a quickie, mutually masturbate, and then fall asleep. I just think we forget. So this is a great reminder of that. But yeah, like I know if I masturbate or I have sex, I can't often remember having trouble sleeping that night. And again, the more we do it, our body will also have a more of a reaction to being a signal to sleep. So I think this is important.
So it says the most significant finding of the study was that partnered sex leading to orgasm reduced the time it took for both men and women to fall asleep. In contrast, sexual activity without orgasm and masturbation, with or without orgasm, did not show similar effects on sleep. So are they saying it really is partnered sex? Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, so they're saying not even masturbation. They're saying, well, they said partner sex without orgasm, though. In contrast, sexual activity without orgasm. Oh, without orgasm and masturbation with, oh.
I know. That's shocking to me. I don't agree with that. I don't think
that's true.
I don't agree with that.
I don't think that's true because you're having the same beliefs, although it does say that when you have an orgasm with a partner, you release more oxytocin.
Interesting.
I say don't knock until you try it. If you've been wanting to masturbate more, this is another good incentive.
That's one of my favorite ways to fall asleep.
It's not going
to
hurt you. Exactly. It's like right there, like leave your vibrator, leave your lube, masturbate, knock out an orgasm and fall asleep. So I think it's awesome. We'll just remind you that their results shown there was a huge difference in frequency of orgasm between men and women, which we already know. But I love when a study just points it out.
Right.
We've been saying that forever. They call it the gender gap, and there's a greater proportion of males who, oh, this is what I'm saying. There's identified a greater portion of males who reported perceiving improved sleep quality and better sleep after engaging in sexual activity. And I think we associate this with men and not with people who have vulvas. So let's just encourage vulva owners too, if you've been needing another incentive, knock out an orgasm with your partner. And if you have to go to bed earlier, because I know we're all really, really tired, just to get in bed a little bit earlier. That's the other thing. Like if you know, like we wait till the last minute to get in bed and it's too late, maybe get in bed with your partner a little bit earlier and sort of just decide that this is going to be the night that we're going to try it and we're going to have some sex tonight.
Mm-hmm. It's also a great way to incentivize putting your phone away earlier if you're having sex with your partner before sleep instead of scrolling through whatever.
I've really tried to do that more often. I'm really getting better at charging it in the bathroom outside the room not having next to the bed. It's just, it's not healthy. It's to the point where I think that people just don't even realize, like it's impacting your sleep. It's impacting your brain. Like the thing that you're looking at right before you fall asleep is the last thing you're thinking about. It could end up in your dreams. Why not just, I don't know, meditate towards bed or read some affirmations or just do something that's going to set you up for a great night's sleep.
Read a book.
Read a book. Oh, gee. Read
journal.
A book. I don't remember people talking about having bad sleep years ago, but maybe just because of, I do know there are studies that show that the screens are having an impact on us.
I also find that the screens are just so stimulating that by the time I put it away, it's like the first time my brain has had a chance to not be stimulated. So it's like all the thoughts that I haven't had the chance to think through are like right there as I'm trying to sleep. So if you get present in your body, whether that's through having sex, having an orgasm, meditating.
There's just so many great apps now, which is the conundrum when you have to have your phone to use an app. But get any of these meditation apps. I love Insight Timer and just say like 5 minute, 10 minute sleeps. We do this sometime, a sleep app. We do that. We play it for like 10 minutes and we fall asleep, 20 minutes, listening to some like binaural beats. Or somebody just, you know, talking you through breath work and is just a huge game changer. Leave the bedroom for sleeping and for sex, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's
how we'll end it on that.
All right. That's it for today's episode. See you on Friday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.